Welcome to episode 55 of Published. Today, in a little bit of a right turn for this podcast, I'll speak with Susan Wittig Albert, the author of the popular China Bales Mysteries, the Darling Dahlia Mysteries, and many other must-read books spanning the mystery, historical fiction, and nonfiction genres as well. Susan will tell us all about her own writing process while offering advice to new authors who might be considering writing their own book series.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to Published. In this episode, we discuss the book writing process and how hard it can be to produce a book series that readers latch onto and keep coming back for. Susan gives her insights into what it takes to craft such rich, lasting storylines and how she creates books time and time again that are truly unputdownable. Let's get into the interview. All right, Susan, thanks so much for joining us on Published. So can you start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about you?
Well, I've been writing full time since the middle 1980s when I left my academic career. I started out by moonlighting while I was doing my job at the university. I was down in Southwest Texas at the time. And while I was doing that, I was writing some young adult novels. I just started out by going down to the bookstore and buying a batch of them that already published, bringing them home, reading them, studying them, and began writing. And that worked out very well. It wasn't long before I was able to attract an agent and a publisher. And it just grew from there. I moved from young adult to adult. I started my first series, Adult Mysteries, in 1992. And added another one in 1995, one that was co-written with my husband. Around 2000, I started adding another one. So at the time, I was juggling three series. And then we dropped off one and I moved on to something else. So it's been a process of growing by addition and then deciding which ones were important to me as a writer, which ones I could grow through the most. I've also done a couple of memoirs, some nonfiction. And towards after about 2010 or so, I began wanting to do some standalones. And that's where a lot of my attention has gone in the last few years. I've done four. I'm in the process of writing the fourth standalone biographical novels.
So did you always have ambitions to become an author, or did you sort of stumble into it?
No, I always wanted to. When I was a child, I wrote my first novel when I was nine. You know, I took some typing paper and folded it over and wrote my little novel. And it was always something I wanted to do. I kind of got sidetracked by going to the university, getting my PhD, you know, doing an academic thing. But the writing was always there. Fiction was always there at the back of my mind. So that's what I wanted to do.
Now, you write what we call cozy mysteries. And how did you talked about sort of the path towards writing mystery, but how did you land in that genre?
Well, for me, cozy is kind of a misnomer, because one series that is that I began as a cozy series is pretty hard edged. The character is an ex-lawyer. And she has a strong take on what is justice and what isn't. And while I use some of the tropes and means from cozy fiction, which cozy mysteries are mysteries where there's not a lot of violence. If there's a lot of blood, it's spilled off stage. There's not a lot of sex. There's not a lot of graphic talk. But that very first novel in that series had the F words frequently. We've edited out since, but that's what I mean when I say it wasn't really cozy to start with. The later series, I write one that's set, a historical mystery series that's set in the 1930s in the South, and it's a little cozier. These are mysteries for women primarily, although I do have quite a few male readers.
Good. So there's an art, of course, to crafting a novel. And what stage of writing or crafting the novel do you enjoy the most?
Well, I'm a research person. I really love doing the research. It's always been my theory that I write what I want to learn. If I already know it, I really, you know, I'm less interested in writing about it. So especially now in the last 10 years or so, I've tended to write books that require a lot of research. I wrote a book called The General's Women, which was about Dwight Eisenhower and the love of his life, who was during the Second World War. And boy, that took a lot of digging into World War II history that I wasn't prepared for, but it was a wonderful learning experience. And I find now that I can see things on television that I never would have paid attention to before I did that research. So learning about the context about what I'm writing about, that's the most fun for me. On the back end, I love to edit. And so I really enjoy going back through drafted material and editing. The least, you know, it's a daily work of writing. You just have to knuckle down and do it.
Is that difficult to edit your own work?
No. No, because I'm very critical. I'm critical of myself. And I love good sentences. So I'm constantly working at the sentence level to, you know, to make something that's readable for readers. I write for readers. I once was on a panel of males, guys, and the question came up, do you write for your readers or do you write for yourself? And all those guys said they wrote for themselves. And I found myself saying, I write to be read. I love it when readers read the books and tell me what they like and what they don't like. And they do tell me that. So writing for readers is, I think, a different kind of thing rather than just writing to please myself.
Yeah, and I'll go out on a limb here and argue that your way is the better way.
Well, I wonder sometimes if women authors are more likely to write for readers than male authors are. It may be, I don't know, maybe it's an ego thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's women's nurturing sense, you know, which is part of the culture. But I do think that women writers are more likely to make efforts, even beyond the writing itself, to connect with their readers, you know, out there in the marketing world. They're out there on social media, you know, connecting with readers. And I think that influences our writing.
Yeah, definitely. They're becoming a part of that community.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is, and it does become a community thing, I think. Yeah.
So a lot of authors or would-be authors get a great idea for a book, but they sit down to start writing and they get stuck. And obviously you have started and finished not just multiple books, but multiple series. So do you have a specific method you use to avoid that getting stuckness at the beginning, or are you just such a seasoned pro that it's not an issue?
Well, you know, it really isn't an issue for me, and I know there's no silver bullet. Everybody's got their own way of doing it. I think most of us don't sit down to sit and say, "Oh, I'm going to write this great series." We have an idea for a book, but publishing, the marketplace for publishing fiction is really a series-oriented marketplace. And that's been the case ever since Conan Doyle and Agatha Christie. You know, they wrote great series. And so if you want to write fiction, if you want to write more than one book, and a lot of people only have one book in mind, and they get that out there, and that's fine, that's good. But if you want to stay in the writing business, and it is a business, it's important to conceive of an idea that's big enough, has enough richness. I think of it as a rich matrix, a dense soup, to develop a number of ideas out of it. I was really interested at an early point, this was around 2000 or so, in the British illustrator, children's book illustrator, Beatrix Potter. Mm. She wrote Peter Rabbit. And I became interested in her life. She was a Victorian woman who went out and bought a farm up in the North Country of England. And she lived up there. She left London and lived up there. And I just thought that was such an interesting, offered so many interesting possibilities. So I wrote a series of 8 mysteries over a period of 8 years that covered 8 years of her life. From 1905 to 1913. So sometimes you can luck into or choose wisely a time period or a character that has a defined period, and you're going to see at the beginning, you can see to the end. So I could see 8 years in that series. And that sure didn't happen with China Bales. I wrote a 3-book proposal and was lucky enough to have that accepted. But whether that was going to go beyond 3 books, you know, who knew? It was an open question until the publisher that I was working with at the time decided that the series had enough sales potential to keep on going with another book and then another book. It's hard to know that at the very beginning. When I sit down to write a new book or a new entry in a current series, what I really love is when I can develop more than one plot strand and then the book doesn't get stuck because one or the other or even a third plot is going to carry it forward until the other plot gets unstuck. Mm. It's kind of tricky, you know, weaving in more than one plot strand, but that keeps the book going and it keeps the reader engaged and interested. And on the other end, it keeps the writer engaged and interested.
Well, that's a good point. Now, when you sit down to write the book, do you already have the ending in mind or do you just write as long as the ideas are flowing?
My theory with mysteries is that if I know the ending when I begin the book, it's probably not going to be a mystery to the reader by the time I get there. So I really love a book as I'm writing. I really love it when there are 3 or 4 possible endings to the book. And the final ending develops organically and it surprises me. You know, the book is, for me, the book is a living thing and it grows and I grow as I move forward with it. I usually try to imagine about half of the book before I start writing. And when I get to the end of the first half, for me, these books are about 85,000-90,000 words. Which is a little long. Cozy mysteries tend to be shorter, like around 70,000. But I like lots of rich stuff in there. So I write a little longer. And when I get about halfway done, I stop and go back and start over again with what I've drafted, do some editing. And then I can move into the second half, beginning to get a sense of how it's going to end. But I don't start really working toward the end until I'm about 3/4 done. And it somehow magically ends up about 87,000 words. Words. It's always kind of a miracle to me.
Yeah, and I would think, you know, for someone who's maybe giving this their first whirl, and as an author myself, I can say that writing a book can feel like a very daunting and long process for the first time. So you've obviously figured this out because you've written so many books and series. And do you have anything that you've brought into your process to achieve that efficiency and consistency?
Well, I'm lucky enough to write every day. Not all of us have that kind of situation. When my husband and I decided that the writing life was the life for us, we kind of pared things down. And we moved out to the country and we cut living expenses and, you know, so we could live on the writing, which allows me to write every day. And I think that's important. But it's also important to remember that you don't have to write a book every day. I really love what E.L. Doctorow said writing is like driving at night in the fog. And it really is. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you make the whole trip that way. I mean, you can drive 250 miles that way by only driving to the end of your headlights. And that's sort of what it is to write every day. And just all I have to do is write today. I don't have to write tomorrow or the day after that. And I can't write tomorrow because I don't know where I'm going to end up today. So it's just, it is a matter of feeling my, as for me, other people work differently. But for me, it's a matter of writing along. Also, writing series is wonderfully, I'm not sure I should use the word efficient, but it certainly is, because you already know the main character set. You know who they are, where they grew up, what their childhood was like, what their current issues are, what they hate, what they love, what they eat, what they wear. And so all of that, just, you know, they're friends. You've lived with them for a while, a long while, and so have your readers. So it's a matter of building on what's already there. You don't have to invent it. Every time I start one of my standalones, I realize how important that is, because it really does save a lot of wear and tear on the imagination.
Isn't that interesting? You can design your own friends.
Yeah, I have a character named Ruby, and she occasionally plays the guitar. And I once thought it would be great to go for a road trip with Ruby playing guitar in the back seat, you know.
I love it. Now, obviously, with all of these books and series under your belt, you're an experienced author now. Looking back, what advice would you give to yourself if you could go back to when you were just starting your first book?
Well, no, I wouldn't want to do that, because there was no internet at that time. And so connections with readers had to be face-to-face. So back in the day, we went to bookstores and libraries. That's the only way we could interface with readers. Now, if I were starting up now, if I were just beginning now, I would say to myself, you know, my experienced self would say to my naive self, connect with readers all along the way. Get your website up. I got started before there were websites even. And make yourself an expert on some aspect of your work, even if you're writing fiction. I didn't know very much about herbs and gardens when I started the China Bale series, but I made myself into an expert, and I was able to give talks to garden clubs and herb groups and, you know, women's groups and so on. So connecting with readers, I think, is the most important thing. These days, a blog is kind of a basic thing that every author needs to have. Start a blog, blog often, get that blog out on social media, and give stuff away. By that I mean give your writing away. I've had authors say to me, young authors say to me, but I want to sell my writing. I don't want to give it away. Well, your commodity, your writing, becomes more valuable the more people know about it. And they may not want to pay money for it up front. So find a way to, you know, offer what you do free to readers. That's what I'd say to myself if I were starting now. And of course, you know, there are the indie bookstores and the libraries and other authors as well. Connecting with them is important. One of the first things I did was to go with Sisters in Crime, which was a wonderful organization when I first joined it, and still is. You know, mystery writers, mystery readers. It's a great niche group.
That's great advice. Thank you for that. So I know that one thing you are passionate about is uplifting female authors and their work, and you created the Story Circle Network, which is an organization that empowers women writers to tell their stories. So can you speak to A, that network, and B, the impact that a community like this can have on a writer?
Well, writing can be a lonely business, especially for people who are just starting out. And often women don't have confidence in their stories. They feel they have a story to tell, but they're not sure anybody cares to listen. So being a part of an organization that gives you a friendly ear and a shoulder to cry on if you need to, a support network, that can really help a very great deal. And if you decide that your writing needs to turn into a book, that you want to get your story out there where people can read it, the book business can be enormously confusing, especially these days when there are so many different paths to publishing. When the technology is changing all the time, and what somebody might tell you one day is accurate and helpful, and the next day it's just going to be wrong and confusing. So it's important to find a group that has the right kind of information, the information you need. And also, in a writing group, as an individual writer, it's awfully easy to get discouraged. And other writers can help. I'm working on a project now that involves the artist Georgia O'Keeffe, and I have a research buddy who knows more about O'Keeffe than I do. So it can be really helpful to have somebody along for the journey that can give you a hand. And women are networkers. You know, they can learn the tricks of the trade and share them. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I love that you built that community to lean on. It's, like you said, very important to have that support. And for anyone listening who might like to check out your work, can you tell us a bit on what you've been working on lately and how our listeners can keep up with you?
Well, a few years ago, I began working on a series. In fact, I didn't think of it as a series at the time. I began working on a project involving the writer Rose Wilder Lane. Her mother wrote the Little House books, Laura Ingalls Wilder. But behind the scenes, Rose really wrote those books. And so I wrote about that. And the next person I got interested in was Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok, her longtime friend. So I was beginning to think about writing about hidden women, women who stood in the shadow of another person. The next one I wrote in that little series was the General's Women, Kay Summersby, sort of standing in the shadow of Dwight Eisenhower. So now I'm working on a project involving Georgia O'Keeffe and her friend Maria Chabot. Maria Chabot built that house that people visit in Abiquiu, where Georgia O'Keeffe lived for the rest of her life from after about 1950. So it's a really exciting research project that will turn into a novel probably in another year and a half. People can find out about my work by looking for my website. It's easy, just www.susanalbert.com. And there's a link on there to subscribe to the blog and to subscribe to an email newsletter that I do every month.
Perfect. I love how you're highlighting these women from history who might have otherwise been missed or overlooked or sort of swept into the shadows, as you said.
Isn't that interesting? These stories are coming out more and more often. I just finished reading a book about Rosalind Franklin, who was the so-called dark lady of DNA. You know, here was this scientific researcher who did much of the groundwork on which Watson and Crick built their very famous DNA model. They didn't do the work, she did. And she was hidden behind there. And there was the wonderful book, Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm. You know, women computers who did a lot of the work in the early days of the space race. So I'm so happy to see stories coming forward of women who have been, you know, standing in those shadows. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful time for women's stories.
Yes, yes, you and I both. Well, as a successful writer with many best-selling novels, what parting advice might you have for our listeners who are just getting started on their journey as an author?
Well, you're going to hit a lot of days that are really discouraged days. So, you know, find ways to take care of yourself, pamper yourself. Don't give in to that discouragement. And for me, that means setting little goals every day that I know I can manage. A word goal or page goal or, you know, something that you can say, hey, look what I did today. Isn't that wonderful? And that gives you the, not just the courage, but the desire to go on, you know, to the next day. Those little rewards. And if you have more than one book in the back of your mind, I think it's a really good idea to start learning where the book business is right now. And especially where the book marketing business is right now. If you want to publish a book, if you just want to write a book for yourself and your family, that's wonderful. And there are ways that you can write that and publish it and never have to worry about the book business. But if you want to write for a wide range of readers, if you want to write more than one book, or you want to start a series, start learning about the book business. There's never a better time to start than right now.
That's great advice. And yes, there's plenty to learn. So, Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's it for our episode today with Susan. We hope you enjoyed learning about fiction writing and the art of creating a successful book series. For notes and resources from today's show, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode55. You can also find advice for writing, publishing, and promoting your work in my book, Ideas, Influence, and Income, which you can learn more about at ideasinfluenceandincome.com. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts. It means a lot to have your feedback and helps us to make sure we're answering your publishing questions. A big thank you to Eleanor Fishborn, who produces the published podcast, and we'll be back next month with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.